This episode is brought to you by Castwave Studios and Amazon. Go to www.castwavestudios.com and click the Amazon tab and search for everything from iPads to streaming video to Surge. So tasty. Doesn't cost you a thing and help keeps the studio producing free content. Go to castwavestudios.com and click the Amazon tab today. Today on Impromptu Who, we are going to go over our interviews from Regeneration Who in Hunt Valley, Maryland. We got to interview a lot of great guests, starting with Andrew Cartmell. Andrew Cartmell was a script editor on Doctor Who and wrote a lot of great stories and was an actor of what we call the Cartmell Master Plan, which was sort of a reboot of the Doctor's origin to give him a little bit more mysticism.
Well, given the fact that Doctor Who's now been on the air for over 50 years, but has yet to divulge any major elements of his backstory, and given the fact that you had originally put forth that idea back in the original run, but it never came to fruition, has there been any mention of the possibility it might happen in upcoming seasons?
I think that they kind of have given too much of a backstory to the Doctor over the years. I think that the whole, as you probably gathered, I think the whole Time Lord thing was a bad idea. So we all approach that in our own way. When Russell took over, he kind of wiped out the Time Lords. It was a Time Warrior, sort of, you know, wanted a clean slate. My own approach was to say that the Doctor was apparently a Time Lord, but in fact he wasn't. He was more than that. So I mean, is Doctor Who? It's supposed to be an enigma. It's supposed to be a central mystery there. We're never supposed to know too much about the guy. So I feel there's a constant kind of tidal drift towards giving details about his background, and I can understand why that is, because it provides mileage for stories. But I think that Russell began to fall into that trap, and Stephen has sort of fallen into that trap. I kind of feel that anything is too much, and I was just trying to do a reset on him and say, oh, we don't really know who this guy was. He was there before the Time Lords. That was my take on it. I think everybody sort of comes to that same conclusion after a while, that all this detail that begins to accrue around and becomes a burden around his neck. And so you eventually have to do some kind of reset, and that was my approach to it. Shall I ask you guys questions? No? Hi, hello there.
So I was doing some research on you, and you majored in computer design or computer-aided design in college?
Well, I was just thinking about this morning, because I was thinking what I should have done. I should have done an English degree, because that's what sort of my natural flair is for English. And I should have tried to get into like a top-notch Ivy League college in England studying English, because I was very good at it. But you see, I thought I should be sensible and get a job because I wanted to write. I thought I should get a job where I can earn money, so I should take a vocational degree. I should do computer science, because that's bound to work out. But the stupid thing about that was my heart wasn't in it. So I got a degree in computer science. I worked in a very good job in Cambridge for a while in computer science, but I didn't. I hated it, but I just never liked it. So it was a really dumb idea doing that. I should have just done the English degree, because then I could probably wouldn't have been any good getting a job, but I probably would have met lots of interesting people, networking and all the rest of it. So I like computing, I'm interested in it, but not enough to do it as a day job, because my heart's on it. I just want to write, basically.
That's good that you fell into something with Doctor Who that you actually like, so that's good.
Yeah, well, I was always wanted to be a writer, and it was because I was writing scripts for television that weren't getting made, but were getting attention. That's what got my name in front of the producer of Doctor Who. He read a script that I'd written, thought, this guy can write, I need a script editor, let's get him in and talk to him. So I always wanted to be a writer, and that led me through into doing Doctor Who, which is great, which has opened lots of doors. I wouldn't be here without it, obviously.
Then we got to interview Sophie Aldred. She played Ace during the Seventh Doctor's tenure, and was one of the last companions the Doctor had in the original series run. She had this to say.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to our series of impromptu Who interviews at Regeneration Who 2015.
Woohoo!
And we are sitting with Sophie Aldred.
Yeehaw!
Thank you for joining us. So I guess my first question is, first and foremost, have there been any new Who episodes that you would have liked to see an ace in?
Oh, all of them.
I was going to really say that too. All of them?
Yeah, every single one.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, I love the way they're all so different from each other as well, the new Who, you know. It's really, really great.
Awesome. Mm. One of my questions is, what are some of your favorite memories from being on the set with Sylvester?
So many memories. It was just great working with Sylvester because he was always up for fun, you know. So he had this kind of attitude that usually when you go in to something and there's regulars on the show, like he and I were, mm-hmm. Usually what happens is that you don't really get to meet the long-standing cast members because mm-hmm. you're just kind of going in there, you quickly do your stuff, and they just don't have time to really develop a relationship with you. Well, Sylvester decided we were going to be a bit different, so he said, right, let's just have fun with everybody. So we just tried to have as much of a good time as possible. Oh. And and John Nathan Turner was always up for having a party. But it kind of, once you've got a happy ship, I think that you creatively can really, you know, work really well.
I completely
and,
agree with that.
Yeah. Mm.
So I was going to ask you a question about, I did some research on you so I could have some questions, right? Uncovered all the dirty work.
Oh, skeletons in my cupboard.
You had, you did some singing and stuff after you got through with Doctor Who. How much of playing Ace did people just be like, oh, you were Ace in Doctor Who? You're in, don't worry about it, you're in.
No, I think there is a certain cachet, of course. But you see, at that time, Doctor Who was a bit of a joke, you know, and it was kind of in its dying days.
Yeah.
So it was actually not a great thing to have been in Doctor Who then. Now, the kind of decision makers and the people who have kind of risen to these positions all grew up with Sylvester and me. So now I get invited in, even for like voiceover work that I do now, people are kind of curious about, you know, what I still look like, I guess, or what happened to me, or, you know. But at the time, it really wasn't kind of much of an in a way.
Okay.
Hmm.
Well, I mean, actually, speaking on that, since Ace was the last companion of the Seventh Doctor in his original run, and of course, we didn't get to see you in the movie, but I mean, for like the 5 minutes Sylvester was in it. So, did they ever discuss like what would have happened to Ace had the series continued, or is it just supposed to be left to our imagination, or did you have an input? It's like, hey, I wish this could have happened.
Well, Andrew Cartmell, who's was the script editor, who, you know, he's here this weekend, he and some of the writers had discussed some, you know, what was going to happen, but they hadn't really fleshed it out too much. But there was one idea which they really liked, which was that the Doctor was going to send Ace to Gallifrey to train to be a kind of Time Lord lady, and...
Really?
Yeah, and that would have been amazing.
So then, yeah. I wish we had video because your face. Awesome.
that would have opened up a whole new can of worms then, because you know everything that we've heard. It's you know you're from Gallifrey, you can train to be a Time Lord. So that would have opened up a whole new thing about like, well, you'd be the first human Time Lady.
Yeah, and can you imagine what Ace would have done with the Time Lords? I think she'd have had those capes they had with the
like those uber popped collars.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I think she'd have just had badges all over her.
Yes.
That would have been really good.
Yes, yes, yes. Oh, 100 times yes. Well, we're actually out of time, but we want to thank you for coming on the show. We really appreciate it.
Oh, it's my real pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot.
Then we interviewed Nicola Bryant. Nicola Bryant played Perry during Peter Davidson and Colin Baker's run.
And that was like 3.5 weeks of my life in which I just went crazy to make it happen, you know. And that's how I got the job. And then my agent said, because he said to me, well, if you get the job, I'll tell them you're not American. So at which point I said, now you need to tell them I'm not American. He went, okay, we signed the contract. Okay. I think we should just wait until you've done your first interview. I said, but that means I'm going to be doing my first interview American. Don't you think some people might just go, but I went to school with her? So it kind of happened that they never really told anyone. So I spent 3 years improvising.
What?
So I did more acting off screen than on, really. So I really feel I should get an award for that.
But sure.
There we go.
It's, well, and actually, following up on that, is your character actually is from Baltimore, Maryland. And Baltimore has its really eclectic dialogue. It's like not quite, you know, not quite a North accent, not quite a Southern accent. How did you like try to combat, you know, trying to pick up on an American accent that, you know, was passable? And in this case, obviously it was, because you got the job. So how would you say you prepared for that?
Well, the first time they didn't even tell me I was from Baltimore until much later. That was something that appeared in books and things much later. But there was this weird thing. They wanted me to be American, and then they had a complete panic that the English audience wouldn't connect, and I was going, like, we watch American television all the time. You know, it's just bizarre. So then they decided that really she had dual nationality. So her father was English, and her mother was American, and, you know, all this stuff was thrown around, and I just thought, whew, I just got to find something that's kind of middle of the road, acceptable, girl, well-educated, but, you know, moments of British boarding schools around the country. You know, parents might be from, mother might be from Baltimore, but you're from all over the place. And I went to school, my best friend in school was from New York. Her parents lived in New York, but her mother had the most English-American accent you've ever heard of. You know, and she was president of the Boston Symphony Orchestra and traveled all around the world. And I thought, that's so similar to that Perry high society mother who's busy. And I sort of modeled Perry a lot on my best friend in boarding school, who had that kind of, not a New York accent, it was kind of a lonely accent, if you know what I mean. It was a mixture of the life and the people and that, but definitely obviously American, except when I got to say the word glass or policeman, which I want to say cop and stuff like that, John would say, no, I don't want to say glass. I want to say glass. Why? Am I suddenly from Boston now? It's like, so there would be those little things you'd have to argue out. And of course, nobody knew at the time I was married to an American. So I went through every bit of my script, who lived not far away from here, really. So all his grandparents and all his family were in Richmond. So not that far away. So I had all these people all the time that I was around. But I would come in and say, look, you wouldn't say mincer. They don't have a mincer. That's a kind of dance thing that we do. But if you're putting meat to make a burger, it's a meat grinder. So I'd argue it out. And then they'd say, yeah, but nobody will know what that means. And so you'd have to fight over the language and stuff. So it was a kind of weird melding. And yet, in real life, most of us are.
So I was doing some reading, and you've done a lot of work with the audiobooks in the series. Is that all of the VO work that you do? Have you done other VO work, or would you like to get into more voiceover work?
Oh, VO work. Yeah. I thought, I have no idea what that is. That's something you do via this and that, you know. I do a lot, yes. I'm just recording an Italian commercial at the moment. I am the voice of Duchy Originals, which is Prince Charles's products. So I do quite a lot of voiceover work, and I do books and things like that. But I don't think of voiceover work as the same as doing a drama. So I don't think of Perry as a voiceover job at all. It's a fully fledged drama. The only difference is, you know, your imagination makes it the best set and the best monsters ever, ever, ever. So I think that's how I view it. I get just as exhausted doing the audio, because I am there on a chariot or on a horse or fighting a monster just the same as I would be in the studio, you know, break out in a sweat, goosebumps, or whatever it is that is required at that moment. I'm in it exactly the same way.
Then we got to interview Terry Molloy. Terry Molloy played Davros during the 5th, 6th, and 7th Doctor's tenures. He had this to say.
Since you're the one actor who's played Davros on more than one separate, more than one episode in different iterations of the Doctor, would you say that your interpretation of Davros transcended into the newer version of Davros in Journey's End?
I don't know, really. I mean, it's a difficult one. I mean, Davros is Davros. I mean, I think the Davros that came back was meant to be going back to the beginning, back to the Michael Wisher thing. And I don't know whether that worked or not, because I didn't watch much of Michael Wisher. I mean, I know it certainly seemed to be a lot more physical than we'd done it and been told to do it, that we were in that chair, you're bolted, you can't move. The only thing you can move, basically, is your mouth. And, you know, your fingers to operate the switches. The thing about Davros as he develops, I mean, I played him lots of times on Big Finish. I mean, I played Davros, about 16 times, bring on the audio and the stage play that we did as well, is, for me, it's been having developed the character and going back and finding what his backstory was with I, Davros. It's always the quiet chess game with the Doctor, which I find the best. The intellectual chess game between the two of them, where they're both trying to flip the other one over. Yet they know they're both on the same intellectual level. They know they're both alone. And, you know, they still play this game. And it's very obvious in Terra Firma, the one with Paul McGann on for Big Finish. Very much in that, where he's trying to push Davros into being the Emperor and into a schizoid state. And Davros is doing the same to the Doctor by showing him basically how he's destroyed his friends and turned all of Earth into Daleks. You know? So, that's it. I don't know. I mean, Davros will continue. They'll probably bring him back with Capaldi. Very rare, like, unlikely to be me. Perhaps because I can see Never Again tattooed on my forehead. You know? I'll quite happily do it in the studio, but it was physically a very, very tough role to do. But, yes.
You worked on a BBC audio series called Scarfires, was that right?
Scarifiers. Yes.
With Nicholas Bryant.
I do, with Nicola Bryant and Nick Courtney, and now David Warner.
And what was that like?
Nicola Bryant? No, Nicola wasn't in Scarifiers.
No?
No. Okay. Nicola's never done a Scarifiers.
Huh?
Yet. We did Iris Wildtime. Nick Courtney, yeah. Nick and I were, this is about 10 years ago, and it's been going on virtually one each year. They decided to run a series called The Scarifiers, which revolves around, in the set in the 1930s in England, around an ageing detective inspector, Lionheart, played by Nick, and this sort of slightly effete academic professor called Professor Edward Dunning, who's a good story writer and no crumbs, and totally ineffectual. But they become MI-13, and very high comedy, very tongue-in-cheek. We steal and plagiarise everything. And one of the episodes, Devil of Denge Marsh, it's a straight steal of The Wicker Man, but we have a wicker fish. And, you know, it's high comedy, high tongue-in-cheek, and then obviously, sadly, Nick died, and so we decided what we're going to do. We're going to close it down. But we carried on with David Warner playing Thumper Crow, who had been Lionheart's sergeant. And we discover Lionheart's body in one of them. And there's this sort of, you know, thing carrying forward. We have lots of, you know, really good, Brian Blessed's been in it, and Kai Owen and people like that have been in. We always have a guest star in each of the episodes. And we do one, generally one a year. But they're great fun. Listen to them.
Impromptu Who is a Castaway Studios production. For other shows and more, go to www.castawaystudios.com.